What is up, Feud fans? We are on our third episode, and it's just getting better and better. We are talking about episode 3, Mommy Dearest, so stick around.
The mashed potato or the
Oh yeah.
What is up, BHL Feud, Betty and Joan fans? We are talking about episode 3, Mommy Dearest.
I love how they just went straight for it. Mommy Dearest.
Right, iconic. To the jugular.
I am your host, Elena Jordan. You can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan and on Instagram at ThatElenaJordanGirl. And today I am joined by my amazing panel.
And my name is Raquel Harris. You can find me on all social media at Raquel Harris TV.
Hey guys, what's up? I'm Nakia Monet and you can find me on social media at Kiki Boom Boom.
Hey everybody, I'm Lisa Mason Lee, and you can find me everywhere at Lisa Mason Lee.
Guys, this episode.
What a good episode.
It was. Woo. It was a good episode.
I think this is probably my favorite thus far.
Yes, I agree. Because it was very action-packed, and we got to see a lot more of BD, which I was really excited about, too. Because, I mean, obviously, we see kind of where their relationship kind of just goes downhill. And it's like, oh, no, I won't get into it too much, but...
It was a mommy-packed episode.
Yes.
A lot of and mothers.
We see a great, like, so much of how they're like. A great juxtaposition.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Two, like, moms in Hollywood. It's like, ladies, get it together. We could have been moms. friends this whole time.
It's my favorite part.
Yeah.
kicking it off... BD,
no.
Already getting everybody in trouble. Getting Jones twins in trouble.
Like, and how old is she?
Like mother, like daughter. They love that cigarette.
I know, right?
Yeah, because I was like, how old are you doing like these cigarettes? And then on set, too, because I'm like, isn't there something against, like, I know there has to be signs, like, no smoking.
Well, there's so many fires on sets back then.
Back then, you could smoke back on an airplane and a car.
Restaurants. It's not until, like, the 80s, I know, in New York City, when Mayor Bloomberg was like, you cannot smoke in restaurants.
Right.
Yeah.
So where they realized it was a hazard.
You can smoke around your babies, your kids. Yeah. So I think that's why kids...
They had ashtrays in the armrests of airliners up until, like, the 70s. You're like, oh, wow.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now that's just, like, the gross place that there's gum and, like, really, really old, Southwest flights.
But it's funny because you see, BD smoking, and then you see the twins.
Yes, so she's trying to, and then of course they immediately get caught,
of course,
by their mom, of course. Mm-hmm. And
she's like, "Don't let them distract you. Don't let anyone distract you." And I'm like, but I like that about her as a mom. Like,
do you?
I do. I like a mom. Like, even when she had her little piece about, you know, when when Betty was asking her, like, you know, how do you become such a great mother? Even though I think that it was very sarcastic.
Motherly advice.
Right. But Joan definitely, because the episode title is Mommy Dearest, so we obviously know that she hasn't been the greatest mother. But I like her piece about being a disciplinarian. And I agree totally. I mean, you should let your kids have freedom, but I do like her very structured way of parenting. And especially when she shared later on about her background with her mother. So I kind of understand why Joan is the way Joan is.
Yeah, we get a lot of their background.
And yeah, movie. Really dark past.
I know. Which Joan, there's, you know, still as far as her stepdad goes, that is something that, you know, hasn't been verified really. But that is definitely true that she went to Catholic school and was, you know, sent to the nunnery and actually worked because her mother couldn't afford her tuition. So she really did scrub toilets at 12 to make sure that she could stay somewhere away from her mom, which is, that's rough.
Yeah.
And it really messed with her because they didn't really address this as much, but in her real life, when she talks about she learned discipline and cleanliness, she used to keep plastic on all of her furniture.
Yes.
All the time. Like, there was a journalist who got really excited because they noted that Joan took the plastic off for her to sit down for an interview.
Huge. I loved how Betty called the twins her two Pomeranians. She's like, I love how you have those Pomeranians trained. Tell me how you do it. That's what I love about Betty Davis because she's so sarcastic.
She's funny. No, when she called her, when Betty called her crawfish.
Crawfish.
I It was so weak.
Close the door. Crawfish.
Right. And she was like, and crawfish. Like, I just can't. It's like, where? But
what I love that when they're sitting at dinner and they're comparing these stories, you kind of get a background on these two different women.
Yeah.
You see Joan Crawford, who tells a story about her sleeping with her mother's second husband at 11.
Yeah.
And her thinking it's okay because she's like, you know, he loved me. And
she said, I led him on. And I was like, what?
Betty's like, you were a child. And then you see Betty Davis, who's like, I didn't get my first tingle until I was 25. And then I had sex when I was 27 on my honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And that's what you look at the two women, because Joan was known to sleep her way into Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And then you have a Betty Davis who worked in her craft.
And do we believe that, though?
Yeah.
Betty?
That was, Betty Davis actually did an interview, too.
Oh,
where
really?
She said it was hell. Waiting until she was complaining about it, which is the only way that I feel like she wasn't lying, is because if she would have been like, it was a delight, I'd be like,
okay.
And she was like, this was miserable, and now I'm finally doing it. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I was like, okay, right. Betty.
I like the
story. I mean, much classier than
that. Right. No, I mean, no way. We all, right.
But I like that you got an idea of who these women are and where they come from, and they're mommies. And that's why I said it's like a mommy episode, because it's all about mothering and nurturing. And you get to see how their mothers treated them. You get to see how they treat their children.
Right. And paralleled with the dinner, too, at the beginning, when we have Joan out with her two daughters. And her daughters, you know, first are all embarrassed about their hair bows.
The
and
bows,
everybody's looking.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's not why they're staring. I am Joan Crawford.
Right.
Obviously.
Right.
But
then
we get her whole backstory, where she's saying, you know, she never got anything from her mother. So she, for Christian, we'll see how the reviews are, and then we'll send flowers.
Right. Yeah. She hesitated.
She did, but I love, you know what she did, though? She didn't want the twins to see how soft she was. So she waited for the twins to get up to be like, okay, give me the card, Mamacita.
Yeah.
And then wrote to Christina, Mommy Dearest. And I love that she signed that, because, of course, Christina
I'm so proud of you.
Wrote
love
the book, Mommy Dearest.
Yeah.
And I was all torn on this episode, because it's one of my favorite episodes. Because this episode, you kind of feel a little bad for Joan, but then I think about, there's a scene in Mommy Dearest, and I don't know if you guys seen the movie or know this part, where Christina is older and she says to her, why did you adopt me? And then Joan, they start fighting and she's choking the life out of Christina.
Right.
So as I'm watching this, you know, everyone's human, and I know Joan went through a lot, but at first I'm starting to feel bad for her, but then the other side I'm like, damn, she really like choked the out of Christina, and they battled
her.
Her twins, though,
they
denied
had a different,
it.
Yeah,
they denied it. They said
Christina
that she
and Christopher
was,
had a horrible life, and then the twins were like, no, she was amazing.
Yeah.
Said she was the best mother anybody could ask for.
And
so.
Joan says that with the first two, she raised them a little bit different, and then she said with the twins, she kind of raised them like what she learned from going to the school. So I'm like, that's very interesting.
I mean, I feel like that's how it usually is with first children, period. I feel like the secondborns are always like, okay.
They get away with more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll see, but oh my gosh. And I literally just went like back and forth with my sister, and I was like, I feel like the big sister is babied. I feel like the big sister is like, or the older sibling is so like, okay, we have to take it easy with you. We have to do everything right. You know, I just want to be a perfectionist as a parent. And then when the second kid comes around, it's like, all right, you got it. You're good. You're fine. We've been there, done that. But yeah, I totally agree. I think Christina and Christopher, like, just kind of, I think they just, I feel like she had adopted them just to have someone around. I don't think that she really, I mean, just like how we saw in the episode today, I don't think she really wants company. She just needs company to feel human. The same way with Mamacita. Like, that scene was so powerful when she was like, oh, whatever, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
And then you are in her room.
She says it in bed with her.
Yeah, she says it in Mommy Dearest, in that scene where she's choking Christina. Christina's like, why did you adopt me? And she's like, I love you. She's like, maybe I did it for a little bit of publicity.
Yeah.
She's like, but I do love you. And they got into this huge fight. And I'm like, damn, did she really just adopt her kids? But then when you think about Joan Crawford and her personality and how her and Hedda are friends and just for the publicity, I'm like,
and we see Hedda's not really that great of a friend this episode, too. Like she's looking for a story. Mm-hmm. And she just feeds whatever she needs to her interviewers in order to get whatever she needs for the story.
But I love that Betty actually calls her out.
Yes. Right.
Like, you know, you're saying that you want to do this story about these women empowering each other. You're the venom.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
You're the one who's, you know, stirring up the pot.
Right. And then she says, go ahead. No,
I'm
I think you're about to say the same thing
she's
I'm about
like,
to say.
She's like, Joan thinks you're crazy. She thinks you're actually her friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because she even says to her, she's like, well, what we think, it doesn't matter what we think
of her.
And it's like, girl, come on now. You were just
kikiing
right. It's just all fake.
But you know what I love?
It's all fake.
After the dinner that they had, they kind of open up to each other. Then Joan kind of reconsiders putting that story on. She calls Hedda. She's like, well, maybe. She's like, because I understand it because she's a single mom in Hollywood. And Hedda's like, no, the Oscars are coming up.
Mm-hmm. We need something. Right.
But
exactly.
I love that, the way that was shot, the juxtaposition of Hedda saying, you know, I want the dirt. And she'll saying, you're just going to have to deal with the sand.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The quote of the episode. I was like, yes. I was waiting on that from the previews last week.
And then showing that back and forth with what's actually happening on set. And where we have, you know, Betty is bringing the Coke to Bob.
Amazing.
Just as a little zing.
Or the Coke, the whole Coke machine freezer on set.
Yeah. And then, you know, cutting back and forth with, I have no support from my director or my co-star. And then, I mean, this episode was just
it was amazing.
To Joan.
Yeah. It was, I'm like, Joan was complaining, but literally as she's complaining about Betty, she's doing everything, being the diva, because when she gets out on the beach, she sees all these young, beautiful ladies in their bikinis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's like, no. I need to go back to make my... And they mentioned that, okay, Joan Crawford looks amazing.
Right.
She looks 5 years younger every time she comes back to set.
I mentioned this in the movie, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, Joan Crawford looks beautiful. Mm. Like, if you look at that movie, Betty Davis, you can tell, really went far with her character.
Yeah.
Joan Crawford looks amazing in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Especially for it to be a time where they don't have as many, like, different makeup.
She looked.
Did you see what she did? She pulled her hair back and had Mamacita tie it.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. That's actually a good trick.
Like, wait a minute. Mamacita's like, it's too tight. She's like, just do it.
I was
maybe
like,
I need to do
that. It's too much. I was like, there are so many Botox beauty tricks that you just, like, oh, wow. Didn't know that was a thing, but now I know.
Mm-hmm. That was before the Botox.
Right, right.
They had to do what you could.
The days of tape.
Joan was around.
It's so.
She didn't just like hair to hide it.
She came out looking 5 years younger.
Which is, we see the direct jealousy when then later on we have Betty on screen and Bob is saying, you know,
she's
20 years younger. Mm-hmm. It's the
actress.
That
just shows you who Betty Davis is, because Joan is all about vanity and Joan looks younger with her looks. Betty Davis is
just
younger with just the
she
acting.
She projected the youth.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, guys. I love Joan, but Betty Davis is such a great actress.
I'm telling you, that's why I feel like this episode was just like, oh man, it's twisting a knife in Joan a little bit. I'm like, okay, we get a Ryan Murphy. You like Betty Davis?
Right.
Right.
What about Brono though? I was
Victor.
Is it Victor Brono?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, what? That threw me off completely. But I do like Betty Davis's relationship with him.
His mommy.
Because at first, yes. I was like, because
surrogate mother.
Okay. Yes. And it made me sad though, because she's, you know, he's overshadowing BD, and BD's like,
wow,
okay.
That was rude, wasn't it?
I know.
Poor BD.
Just shut her down.
BD. I love that. At the beginning of the episode, talking about all the families and everything, Bob just flat out says it. You know, Adele comes up, she's a script girl, and because she's related to Bob, Betty's being really nice, and he goes, and, you know, she's saying she's great at her job, I'm not just showing her favoritism, and he's like, it's nepotism. It's Hollywood, it runs on it.
Okay.
And she just nonchalantly says, oh, well, maybe I should have my daughter play the neighbor girl, and he latches on, which is funny because in interviews and things, it was kind of the opposite, was that she was really pushing for her daughter to do it because she thought it would be fun to kind of have, I guess, kind of like a bonding experience, basically, to have her daughter work with her, but her daughter didn't want to do it and didn't really want to act.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. So, it's kind of interesting to see, like, both takes.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I love knowing that, and I love actually watching the movie and watching BD. Wasn't the greatest actress, but it's cute to see like her daughter like in this role, and she's the neighbor girl, and she's talking bad about baby Jane, who happens to be her mom. So I thought that was kind of cool.
And the disapproval from her mom, it's just
sucked. And it's like, and Bob had even said, it's like, that's she's the mother, or she's the daughter of an amazing actress. Like, why don't you think that she wouldn't be great? And she's like, but she's not me. Sorry.
She's like, you didn't look into the camera once.
Right. She said, you spoke so well and clearly.
She's like, if Joan didn't ruin the movie, you definitely didn't ruin it.
That was amazing.
I'm like, what a way for the compliments, Mom.
Right, but there's such like no ending compliments. Like,
especially when Bob is flat out saying, you know, and she's like, okay, what do I say to my daughter? She's awful. He's like, well, you can't say she stinks on ice. You gotta lie.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to her talking to Victor and really praising him. And then
she's like, I love talent.
It's true narcissism.
Yeah. It really is. It's like there's no
empathy coming out of Betty or Joan.
No.
It shows you these two women, even when they're love lives, like they put their career before anything, even their children.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because she says it, Betty's like, I love talent. And when she sees how good Victor is, she latches on as his surrogate mother. Uh-huh. And then he opens up and says, you know, as she knows that he's gay in Hollywood, and she opens up kind of as his mom. And I just wanted to point out something because, you know, back in the day, especially gay in Hollywood, there were a lot of undercover actors. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a guy who wrote a book. His name is Scotty Bowers.
Mm-hmm.
So Scotty Bowers wrote this book, and he was known to kind of be like the Heidi Fleiss back in the 50s and 60s. Mm. And he was kind of a male prostitute, but he used to hook up like a lot of celebrities, straight gay and bisexual celebrities. And some known people were like Cary Grant. And allegedly he had a sexual affair with Cary Grant and Rock Hudson and Katherine Hepburn. He hooked up with a few women. Like, the book is really good. And I'm going to tell you guys the name of the book. And it's he named a few actors in it. But the reason I brought up the book is because when you think about actors back in the 60s and the 50s and the 40s, nobody was out. People didn't find out about Rock Hudson until he died from AIDS.
Yeah.
Which is such a heartbreaking scene, too, when Betty is saying, you know, like, this could ruin your career.
Yeah.
You got to be more careful. And is having to lie to the police officer and say, right, he's doing research.
Right. Oh, well, yeah, I mean, he's doing real research. He's on his knees doing research for a movie.
Right. But that's even still today in Hollywood, a lot of men do not come out because they know that it will ruin their career. But I mean, and that's unfortunate because we are starting to get into a more an accepting generation where people are like, you know, I don't care about what that has to do with anything. But especially for like heartthrobs, like those like Brad Pitt's or if Brad Pitt or anyone, I mean, Anderson Cooper, when he came out, I was like, that's fine. I'm still going to think that you were fine as hell. But at the same time,
like Ricky Martin. Like,
That was huge.
That has to be like way later.
I was like, not shocked.
Think about, I mean, he couldn't do it at the height of his
career. No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you go.
I totally agree because women, when you're creating a star or when you are managing a star, you want everyone to flock to them. So if you become gay or you have a gay image connected to you, in hindsight, it still would connect because the gay population would be like, oh, got you, I love you. But at the same time, you would lose that female audience.
In eighth grade, I knew. I would watch TRL and I'm like, oh, Ricky Martin's so gay. So
yeah, I felt the same way.
I didn't know.
But you know what sucks, though? Hollywood has this idea like, oh, if you're gay, you're not going to sell. Or a movie about just people of color is not going to sell. And maybe it will. And I think that Hollywood just has these crazy old ideas. And that's why so many men in the 50s and 60s were in the closet and they got married to these women.
It's really not until like the internet came around and then the audience members were able to say like, hey, what up, studios? We actually want to see reflections of all of ourselves, please.
You know what I'm saying?
Have this one image would be great.
Exactly. I think it's harder for the people who come out later and they've already had a brand where they were saying that they were heterosexual.
Yes.
If you already came out and was like, okay, I'm gay. Like, for instance, Ellen, we all knew. Like, Ellen, you're gay. I don't think she ever had, like, a moment where she just came out and was like,
well, it was hard for her because
she was breaking down barriers because she was the first to come out on her sitcom.
She got kind of blackballed. Well, right, but I'm saying she got blackballed, but she had already been that way from the jump. So I don't think it was harder for her to be taken into from the community because it was like, okay.
But I think, like, even people like Ricky Martin, like, I don't think he didn't come on and say he was, like, straight. I think there's some celebrities that just don't tell their business.
Yeah.
And then 10 years from now, they're like, well, actually, this is my partner. I just didn't tell you guys that.
Which I don't feel like anyone should be compelled to do that.
No,
you shouldn't. I don't know why people say, like, oh, you should come out. Well, okay, did you come out as a heterosexual? No.
Right. Good point.
It's like I don't know why. Yeah. Like, people impose this, like, need for, like,
it's
me
nobody's
to
nobody's business.
Exactly.
It's nobody's business.
Exactly.
Nobody's business.
Yeah.
And it just sucks that back then the guys had to be these heartthrobs and the Cary Grant and the Spencer Tracys.
Absolutely.
They had to have wives.
But it's weird to me, too, because Victor would do interviews and stuff talking about how close he was with Joan.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy.
Which is so weird that they, like, really hyped up his relationship with Betty in this episode, Which to me, I was like, okay, but like Joan did have some redeeming features. Like Victor was actually super close with Joan and had a lot of amazing things to say about her. And Bette Davis actually did a whole statement saying that she was kind of rude to him on set and apologized. So I was like, huh, this is very interesting.
I love that Bette says, all the queens love me.
That's how she knew, like, that she made it was when people started dressing as her. But that the true legacy comes from having children to really tie it back into this, like, really driving home this mommy point.
And she took Victor in as her son. And I felt bad for BD, but then you see the love that she's giving to Victor, who doesn't really get the love from his mom because what he's struggling through. And she kind of took him under her wing. He's also an actor, and Bob tells her, like, give him a chance. He's a great actor. He's from the stage. You'll get to know him. So I like how she warmed up to him, and they got to do their lines together. But poor BD had to sit on the outside. And
I was like, you're a terrible mom. Like, that was so awful. Like, are you serious? Like, and she's literally yearning, like, please, mom, like, help me. I want to be better. I want to do this. And you can tell.
I want to do a good job.
Right.
Yeah.
And I want to do this for you because I know I'm a direct reflection of who you are. And then on top of that, Hedda is obviously hearing it from outside sources that, oh, yeah, yeah, your daughter actually stinks. Exactly. So it's like, mom, when do you come in and say no? And it shouldn't have happened until later on in the episode when she was like, no, you're great. You're amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't have had to take that long. And the fact that she just doesn't, it's so immoral to me because it's like, why do you not feel bad? Like, this is your kid. Like,
especially when earlier she's talking about her mom and how she says that he's her only close female friend. It's like, you're not being a very good friend to your daughter. Like, if your mother just passed last year, maybe use that as an opportunity to be a little
closer to your daughter. Some people in that moment, I think Bette, it's like some people don't realize what's going on until they actually step outside.
Yeah.
Until someone like a BD actually, you know, sits her down and is like, mom, you really hurt my feelings. I think she's that type. And because she's so invested in her craft and goodness sake, she divorced her husband just because he sucked at acting. Like, and I think she loves her kids because you see her talk about her other daughter, Margot. Was in the institution, you know, and I think she loves her kids, but I think these two women love their careers so much.
Well, then don't have kids.
That, you know, they put it before the kids, and Joan adopted her kids, and I like when Joan says she's like, she felt lonely because she's like, your career is gone, your kids are grown up, you have no marriage, you're just alone. And it's like, I think these women want to be great moms, but their career... And they're fighting each other in this industry. And
I think it's just very selfish. I think it's very, very selfish. Do not ever include someone in your life if you don't have time to give them the type of care that you would want in a relationship.
I agree.
So it's like, I mean, and I get it. Like, I totally get it. You want to be able to have this you know, pitch-perfect family and have kids and have your career and have the great husband. But sometimes that's just not the life that you may be given. And you have to accept that. And that's not... bad or good. It's just what it is. And I feel like, you know, with all the adoptions and things like that, just like what Joan was trying to do later on, it's like, girl, you're literally going to waste someone's life or you're going to ruin someone's life because you're psychologically abusing them.
Narcissists don't care.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I read up on it.
Yeah.
Right. I know a little bit about it.
It's just about what they want, fulfilling their needs.
And that's so sad because I feel like that's the problem or that's the flaw within the human community where it's like, oh, it's me. And you're not realizing that that's an entire being that's going to feel, think, and reflect on everything that you're throwing at them.
But for them, it's about having entertainment around.
It's like going
to the orphanage, adopting a kid. Having a pet around.
Exactly.
That's true, because Joan does say, she's like, you know, when I got these kids, I wanted to come home and to hear them.
Hear laughter and joy.
She just didn't want to be lonely, and that's why I bring it back to the Mommy Dearest movie where Christina asks her, why did you even adopt me? Mm-hmm. And she's like, I did it because I loved you. Maybe for a little publicity, but I do love you.
They like to live and act all day, even when they go home.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy part. Like, you want to believe that you're in this imaginary world of perfection, but you really aren't. You just need to feel that in order to feel just a little bit normal. And then when you go back to acting, it's like, all right, I'm getting paid to do this, so I'm good.
Mm-hmm. And it's so sad to see the juxtaposition of how they each treat their children differently, too. Like, not even just Joan treating her kids better, her twins better, but seeing the direct where BD is just getting, you know, rained on. And she even says... she should be billed as BD Merrill, not Davis.
Right.
Just
completely
distancing herself from her own daughter. Oh, it's like,
rotten.
And then immediately to the phone call with Margot.
I'm like,
where
girl.
She just like tearing up. You see like the real love, but Margot didn't even want to have it.
Yeah.
Margot was like, walks away.
Good night. Good night.
Baby Margot was like, I'm not here for this.
Right.
I have something to
Where
do.
Gotta you? Go. You're not here. That's mm-hmm. what I understand.
And neither am I. Click.
I'm gonna go play. Good night.
Right, right. Good night,
mommy. It's very interesting. Like, I think Betty and Joan love their kids, but I think their love just wasn't, because, you know, kids need affection and kids need love. And I think at that moment, especially back then, they just didn't get it. And when she said that, just bill her as BD Merrill. Then she tried to justify it. She's like, well, he did adopt her legally. Betty.
Come on. Oh, it's like your initials, boo. What? Like, come I don't, on, like, Betty. It's just.
She didn't want her daughters. She didn't want Davis on the bill.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because it's a bad look.
Because her acting wasn't approved.
Yeah. Right.
And,
right.
I think Betty had it in her mind because, like she said, she's like, she's not an actress. No, she's not an actress. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want it. And
she's
I
a beautiful think, face.
You know, and to everything to them, it's a competition. Mm-hmm. Like Joan even says, I'm not going to send Christina flowers until I see what those reviews look like.
Yeah,
is she a crazy
Come
person
on now? Yeah,
I'm actually shocked that Betty considered even having BD in the movie because she's so pretty and young, and the guys all like her. You know,
I think it was like a competition. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess it was about that.
It's all about me. Yeah. Whatever looks better at going against Joan or
BD even says you make it look so easy, and so then it's like, oh, I'm complimenting you, but really, it's a compliment to me because you. Didn't even look in the camera.
That had to be. I'm sorry that I laugh at this, but that was one of my favorite moments.
Such a zing.
Because it's so sad. Because this girl, she lashes out on you the last episode, and she's looking for your love. And Betty's like, "You didn't look in the camera,
right?"
And the girl's saying, "She's like, I ruined it." And she's like, "No, you said all your lies." And I'm like, "That's not the love she needs." And I think at that moment, you know, I think Betty and Joan have lived their life competing with each other, especially on this set, that they don't even realize what's going on around them with their kids. And it sucked that their kids had to go through that. And I think Betty, because she even says, she's like, Joan Crawford didn't ruin the movie. It's like she's still competing with Joan.
Yes.
And she didn't even notice her baby girl is like,
and the
hello,
empty compliment.
Me.
Oh, that's such an empty compliment. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if Joan can't ruin it, then you sure can't.
Like, and they have, in this episode too, even with all of the mommy things, they have to have their feud elements. So we see them, you know, several times. One, after they finally have kind of, you know, reconnected a little bit.
Right.
And she's like, oh, you're going to support me no matter what. Mm-hmm. Then takes that to mean she's going to take the supporting role so that I can be billed as lead. Which leads to one of my favorite zings. Where's your wheelchair?
Right.
On set. Well, get it, because you're going to need it in a minute.
Betty Davis literally has some of the best quotes outside of this movie and in real life.
Yeah.
Oh,
I was happy when they had the scene, when they did the compilation of them going back and forth in competition, and we finally see her, Joan, put the weights. I was waiting for it. I was
waiting for it?
Yes, because I read that was something that Joan had did while on scene, and so I'm just like, oh my gosh, when she flipped up her skirt, I was like, girl, give it, please. I need to see what it is, girl.
That made me laugh so hard because she swore up and down that she didn't do it. Everybody said that she did.
Yeah,
but she swore up and down that she didn't do it because she said, weights and have Betty tell everyone that I weigh as much of an elephant. Get out of here with that. It's not true.
Preposterous.
Like, I love it. She's like, I'm ticklish. That had to be a favorite scene of mine.
Oh.
And, you know, Betty allegedly had back problems, so for her to do that, and they had to do it over and over and over, and then Betty kicking her in the head.
Oh.
I love because she's practicing on the dummy first, and Joan's looking like,
filled this a little too much.
She's like, Betty, you can stop kicking the dummy, and he's like, all right, Joan, we need you now. Joan Crawford's
like, I don't know. And if I was the director, I'd be like, but then again, it's gonna make the best scene too.
Did you get it?
Right. You got that. Right, exactly.
You
got that right.
Yeah, because that was real.
They
so
were
it's
all
like,
good,
which I love that's prefaced too by this whole, you know, when she's yelling about the Oscars and she's like, I'll get my three. I'll be the first to get three because I got robbed in 1950 because her co-star. There was already two supporting actresses, so she went for billing for best actress. So. That knocked Betty out.
Mm-hmm.
But then Joan, Gloria Swanson, was the one who was robbed in 1950,
right.
You bitch.
You bitch. Yes, I was like, please. But there was like a little pause, bitch.
I loved it.
I was like, Jesus.
I kind of loved it because it... because, like, when they go at each other, I feel like Betty always has the upper hand because she's so sly and she comes with her comments super quick. Yeah. So I love for Joan to be like, you bitch.
It's just Joan's tone. And it's the thing she says, it's like, oh.
Mommy Dares is coming out. I was like, yes, Joan. Tell Betty how you feel.
I know.
She's like, Gloria Swanson was robbed. Oh. They're so dramatic.
I just think of Joan, like, as this cute old lady. And if she was alive, I know she'd hate to hear that. But she's like, cute old lady, I'm not watching BSL anymore. She'd
throw you upset. Yeah.
Right, right. But no, she is, because she, like, she'll come in and be like, Betty, I just wanted to, you know, let you, like, she'll come in and just be so sweet, but it's actually, like, she needs to be on that commercial, the sweet and sour, those candies.
They're sour.
Yeah, they're sweet.
I heard, I was listening to audio of Betty Davis, and they were interviewing her after the movie, and they're like, tell us about Joan Crawford, and she starts dying laughing. She's like, no. She's like, professionally, you know, she was great, and she was beautiful. She's like, personally, meet me outside, and everyone starts cracking up. Then she goes, no. Professionally, she was great, but I'll tell you more about it after. So that had me dying laughing. And another quote that Betty says is when Bob is looking for the neighbor girl, and he's like, well, how about Christina, her daughter? And he's like, well, she's too old. She's like, she's adopted, so she probably has talent.
I'm like, yeah. Oh, such a good scene. Oh,
there's Betty, so much shade.
She knows how to stab you right in the heart.
She does. Betty, like, she definitely turned up a little bit more, because she was always kind of more on the lighter, not so much shade, besides the Louise and things like that. Mm-hmm. But this episode, she really showed how catty she could be. So I was like, okay, I see you. Because I feel like Joan's always been that one that's like, I have something up my sleeve.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I love Betty Davis. I mean, if you look at all her pictures, she's... My favorite movies is All About Eve. And she, like...
Yeah.
I'm like, if she's anything like this in real life, the movie is just so awesome because she says, like, the greatest quotes... And in the movie, she's competing with the younger girl who comes in, who wants, I'm your biggest fan, you're my idol. And this girl kind of steals the light under Eve. And it kind of reminded me, because Betty Davis, I think this time, was in her 40s when she did All About Eve and won the Oscar. Mm-hmm. So in that movie, Betty Davis' character, Eve, she was just, like, literally with the comments, I'm like, I love Betty Davis, she's my idol. Mm.
Just felt like real life.
I got a little teary eyed when they did the reenactment scene, the beach scene with Betty and Joan, mm-hmm. and she's saying, "Oh, we could have been friends all along this time." And it kind of like reflected
what was really happening. Yeah.
Real life. It's a really great scene, and it's true. They could have been friends this whole time.
And that's even sad. That I've been blaming you this whole time, but really I crippled myself. And you're like, that is the perfect metaphor for exactly what you're doing.
Exactly.
Just shooting yourself in the foot over and over, because then Jack is talking to Bob about, you know, I've already booked 400 theaters for this.
Right.
And she's supposed to be... dying on the beach every time beautiful. You cut back to her. Right. It's like freaking case of Benjamin Button.
She looks younger and beautiful every time. And she's supposed to be dead.
I like how Robert's like, how are we going to pay for that? And he's like, I'm not paying
for that. He's coming out of your end, Bob. And then it just goes to the giant sandbox.
Yeah, it's on the stage. Now, is that true? Did they shoot on the stage?
Yeah, that really did happen. They went to Santa Monica. And in Betty's words, she didn't flat out say. She just said, Joan had some issues. Alcohol and the sunshine don't seem to combine too well. It leads to a lot of perspiration. I was like, God, girl.
Betty's quote was, she's like, God, it's 100 degrees and she's already drunk.
Yeah. Which is so funny, because there actually was a note, too, that is like a written note that Joan was complaining about Betty's B.O. Mm. Like when she was talking about that to Hedda.
Hedda does say that.
So that's when Betty is like coming in with like, you sweaty bitch.
He tried it. I watched another, because I'm such a geek. I watched this interview, and it's actually the cast of Feud, and Catherine Zeta-Jones is speaking because her father-in-law is Kirk Douglas, who's one of the only living people from the golden era of Hollywood. And so she was telling him like what she was doing with this movie, and she's like, you know, I'm playing Olivia. And he's like, oh, Olivia. And then she says, well, you know, we're doing Joan Crawford. And Kirk Douglas is like, Joan Crawford was out of her mind. Like, and then she's like, well, what about Betty Davis? He's like, I liked Betty. She always spoke her mind. She always kept it real. And I started dying laughing. And I forget that Catherine Zeta-Jones' father-in-law is Kirk Douglas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she says they actually get to sit down and have conversations because Kirk and Olivia are 100. They turned 100. So she's like, we have tea and we have these conversations about this time. So I thought that was awesome.
That is awesome. So cool.
Yeah, that super is cool moment. But I love that he said Joan Crawford. He's like, she was out of her effing mind.
I think she is. Yeah. I think she either suffers from bipolar disorder or she...
OCD. She has a broken childhood.
PTSD, for sure. And that's why I feel bad for her even more, because it's like... some things you just can't help that to happen when you go through those traumatic situations when you're younger. And so it's like, you don't want to blame that person, but now that they're more aware of what's going on, you want them to take a little bit more of a stronger action. Yeah. But
I felt sad for Joan, knowing her childhood and her mother, you know, her mother getting rid of her over a man, kind of. You're going to boarding school, you're 12, get out. You stuck with my husband. No, your husband sexually molested your 11-year-old, even though she thought it was okay, and she's like, he loved me. No, you were 11.
And she really put it in her...
She still, believes it.
Exactly. And she's like, because it wasn't incest, because we didn't share blood. And I'm like,
girl, you were... And Betty's like, you were a child. So that's why I said I was struggling, because if you go back and you watch Mommy Dearest, you're like, oh, this bitch, Joan.
Yeah.
But then when you get to see where she's from and her background, you're like, oh, okay.
And it kind of seems as if she's told herself that in order to believe it, because like she's like, well, it wasn't, you know, we don't share blood. And then she said something about, oh, well, I mean, I led him on to me.
Yeah. Right.
And but you're never a baby. Know. Exactly. And I feel like she's taught herself that, so because sad. Maybe her mother told her that, no, you led him on, and that, and he can't, you know, he's a man.
Still
believes
it.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, so sad.
And it's kind of, like, I hate to be like a millennial kid right now, but even like the situation, I know, because I'm about to, you're going to be like, whatever. But yeah, like with Lion King, Simba, that's a perfect example of how traumatic situations can, Lion King is a deep movie, okay? It really is, because he literally grew up believing he was the reason why he killed, you know, his father died. Instead of, and it's like that traumatic, like that was a great example of PTSD. He didn't go home for years. Like, that's correct. I know this is such a weird moment.
No, I love
but,
it.
But Lion seriously. King is great. It's kids, like, that is a very gentle stage when they're young and they're seeing their parents go through that, like whether they face a divorce or they see abusive, you know, situations in their household, that carries with them.
But a lot of adults now, you know, people don't really know their background. A lot of things stem from their childhood.
Yeah.
And that's
what shapes your reality.
It really does.
And then we see throughout this whole episode, like, these ladies creating their own reality and how it doesn't necessarily meet up, and getting to see the roots of that.
Yeah.
And then seeing it led into, you know, how they're even just talking to each other.
Yeah.
And then talking to Hedda. I love when they're talking about Hollywood, too. And after Joan is saying, you know, I hate this effing picture, but it's going to make me a pretty penny. And, you know,
you're selling your soul.
She immediately goes to Betty and she's like, word on the street is. And she's like, is that what the streetwalkers are saying?
It's always a pickup.
That Betty Davis is so great. And what I love that scene, it's like, you know, she loves BD and she defends her, but then she says that last comment that BD hears.
And she just happens to walk down the steps.
She's like, her role wasn't that big enough to ruin the movie, but she's really trying to defend her daughter because Hedda brings up and she's like, don't you put my child's name in this trashy article.
Right.
But to be real with you, her role wasn't. I'm like, oh, Betty, no.
Yeah, it was like an ouch.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think she just honestly, okay, this is the crazy thing. Joan and Betty describe their childhoods with their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Joan has this crazy childhood with her horrible mother. Allegedly, that's what she says. Betty's close to her mother. But then you see how they treat their children. Betty, you would think that she would want her daughter a little bit closer, but she's kind of in competition
that
with
PTSD.
Her. Right? And then Joan, with her, the twins, not Christina and Christopher, but now the twins, and she's trying to keep them close. So it's funny because to me, it's kind of like the opposite, and you would think that they would want to
do the same.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, I'm not saying if I'm saying it right, but especially Betty, because she was so close to her mother, I just think she didn't know
how to love her. She would have a better relationship.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, it all depends on how you react to something. There are some people who are born or who are raised in homes where both of your parents argue a lot. Mm-hmm. One kid might come out and say, oh, I just can't argue. I don't like to argue. I hate it.
Or they're loud.
Or they'll be, the other kid will be like, okay, I want to be a lawyer one day. I now am comfortable with arguing and I don't have a problem with it. So it's all reactionary. Some people just, with your personality, you just react a different type of way, or you grow in a different type of way. But no matter what, even if the situation is as similar as it possibly could be, people just are different and they react to different things. And it's sad because you never know what the outcome could be. Mm-hmm. So
I think, too, with this, it's really trying to highlight, you know, the situation of Hollywood being
absolutely.
Such an unnatural environment. Like, she even point blank says, this isn't real life, it's Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all fake, from the manicured lawns to your manufactured concern. Yeah. So,
and then even Joan saying to Bob, he's like, why can't you two just get along and be successful? And she's like, in this town?
right. Madness.
There's room for both of you to be successful.
Yes, right.
Not in this town, but I like how they highlight Hollywood.
So this show just, it perfectly hones in on one aspect each episode, so I just can't even wait to see what they're going to do next episode.
So excited, man.
But in the meantime, where can we find more from you, ladies?
Hey, you can find me everywhere at Lisa Mason Lee.
You can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom, and Monday I do The Break, Sunday I do Girls, and Wednesday I do Greenleaf.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I was like, all right. My name is Raquel Harris. You can find me on all social media at Raquel Harris TV. And I also do Greenleaf with Kiki on Wednesdays. And you can follow my blog, Raquel Conveys, every single Sunday on YouTube.
And I'm Elena Jordan. You can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan and on Instagram at That Elena Jordan Girl. I also do the Face Off After Show on AfterBuzz TV. And you can also catch me doing a sci-fi radio drama on RelativityPodcast.com. And you can catch all of us here at BHL Online. Hey. And we hope to see you guys next week.
Bye. Thanks for watching.
Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined!
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.